It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are off and running on this penultimate day. I just love to use the word penultimate. This penultimate day of June 2022. One more day in June 2022 to go, and then, golly, it's going to feel like summer's a third over. Wow. Still kind of baffled how summer just blazes past while February takes a nice, long, leisurely, frozen, gray, leaden, depressing stroll. Hi, I'm Robin, little ray of sunshine. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And if you'd like to augment your listening experience, if you're listening live, you know, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, the great globe round. Well, you should pop on by the horn chat room. The merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that it is. And be immediately greeted by early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky. Hey, Theo. Hey, Squeaky. Here before the tardy bell could even ring. You know, that shit can go in your permanent record. And, well, a merry time will be had by all, because it is, in fact, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, of course. This program is no different. So I can happily report that we say thank you to our 29th day of the month subscribers. And what that means is, well, we have no 29th day of the month subscribers because of the way PayPal works and February being such a pissy little pain in the ass month of indeterminate length. Basically, everything gets rolled back to the 28th. So, thank you nonetheless, however, because we are in a deep fundraising hole. Thank you very kindly to our dear friend Harold. Thanks, Harold. Harold being the president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Just thank God we've been talking about Sochtris for years, and it still gives me a smile. Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. it's adorable. But thank you, Harold. Thank you for getting us started. That answers Ralph's Call Lassie challenge that was carried over from yesterday to today. And what that means is our fundraising goal has dropped even before the program begins. Has dropped from $1,149.35 to $1,199.35, and then has dropped even further. And I'm sorry, this is just going to, I got to cheat. I got to use the calculator. Because sometimes the ciphering just gets, so 1099.352 takeaway. The fundraising goal now to finish the month of June to the good is $1,024.35. And this evening and tomorrow's all the time we've got for doing that. So that works out to $512.17.5 per program, or maybe somehow or another, if we can, I don't know, maybe we can have a prayer meeting miracle. Is that possible? Because it is in fact prayer meeting Wednesday, and by the way, two more days to for new subscribers to get their first month's $10 a month subscription doubled. Tripled, actually, courtesy of Ralphs as well. Ralphs jumping in alongside our pal Zed out in Iwija. So there's a total of seven that can happen for. And I think that means we've got room for five. So if anybody would like to be a new subscriber, gosh, your $10 could become $20. Bang, just like that. And you'd be helping to take down the fundraising goal as well, because this is independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting, non-commercial, non-capitalist, not quite communist, but definitely non-socialist, or non-capitalist rather. Maybe kind of, I don't know, we'll call it democratic socialism. That kind of has a ring to it, maybe. Or how about FDR Democrat? Now, just look, there's no commercials here. There's no Buy Gold Now ads if you're new to the program. There's no pitches for stupid beats or any of the other patent medicine nostrums that seem to proliferate across the broadcast political talk spectrum, such as it is. And sadly, you know, our supply of Alabama sex clams ran out sometime in 2018, so we can't be hustling any of those. But nonetheless, we can hopefully finish. Oh, please. Finish June to the good. And by the way, there is another challenge on the table this evening as well. Chris in Germany reached out earlier today and said, asked, would it be helpful if I was to put up a $100 Fuck the Theocrats challenge? And so I said, yes, that would be most helpful. There is, courtesy of Chris in Germany, a $100 Fuck the Theocrats challenge, which would get us down to $7.24 to go to finish the month of June. So please don't let that go by. It's a great opportunity to double your money. So all that having been said, well, like I said, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. It is, and for a very hot day like today was around here, it was kind of, I gotta give props to the little old blue haired ladies and the little old blue haired men of down in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, because they went the extra mile. They went for a little bit simple today. In the heat of summer, big old pot of pinto beans with pans and pans and pans of cornbread. That's what hotted up the kitchen so much, was the cornbread. But the little old blue haired ladies decided to make it a little special today. They added some minced up jalapenos and some onions and some whole kernel corn to the cornbread batter, and went out and picked some just absolutely pungent green onions. So there's a green onion to munch on with it, and so cornbread, butter, brown beans, yeah, and just a little something light for dessert, you know, a little ice cold Jell-O salad, you know, the one that's made with the orange Jell-O with the cottage cheese in it, and the and the mandarin oranges, and just, it's very nice. And so, having brown beans, really, y'all, we're all going to be stuck there in the Cathedral of Common Sense together. What were you thinking? Well, I'm thinking maybe the naughty nun and the aggravated abbess has been punked because, well, nonetheless, after having consumed our repast, the deacons did trundle their massive bulk out into the Cathedral of Common Sense parking lot where they proceeded to chain smoke with the sinners for a while. Of course, at the mere mention of the cathedral and horn solar powered cattle prod, they got moving, and in proof of the laws of motion, you know, bodies at rest tend to remain at rest, and deacons in motion tend to remain in motion until they go all the way through the vestibule door, past that desiccated bowl of butter mints, and arrive down front and haul themselves up to a stop in the front row where I can catch them when they snooze. And they're getting ready to move about the sanctuary, brethren and sistren, and with the collection plate. And, well, that's true, Brother Deacon Asa telling me, you're ancient, it all blazes past quickly. No, February doesn't. I will fight you on that. February creeps and crawls in its petty pace. But June has flown by. But the deacons made it down here, down to the front of the cathedral, and they're waiting with the heavy brass-bound, velvet-lined plates, huffing and puffing and sweating, and I hope that's as bad as it gets, but I'm not feeling too sanguine about the bean dinner, frankly. But they're going to move among you. They'll hand you the plate. You take the plate, you press the little PayPal button in the bottom of it, or the Venmo button, or the Patreon button, your choice. Or you can even press U.S. Postal Service and use the horn mailing address at 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 825801, 25801, and help out that way. Thank you very kindly to Brandon and Fennell. I went to the post office recently and saw some correspondence from them. Thank you. That actually gets us down to $9.99.35, as a matter of fact. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Fennell, in Brooklyn. And so just take the plate, put something in it, pass it, you know, be careful there amongst the pews and whatnot. And as that happens, with every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sestren, we will call the minister of music forward to lead us in the offertory hymn. Brother minister of music, if you would please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around!
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around!
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST.
Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, lambsy dotes and mersey dotes and mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you, brethren and sistren? Ha! Glory! Welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Brethren and sisters and non-binaries, I call you to get up off of your seats and onto your feet and scrunch and screech and waggle and waddle and wiggle out from betwixt the pews and come on down that blood-red carpet and fall upon your knees at the altar and place your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense of flowing through you from the server on high. I am Aggravated Abbess, Mordant Mother Superior, Naughty Nun, Ultimate Imam, Uber Rabbi, Maximum Pope, Vicarious Vicar, Petulant Pontiff, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Robin Kincaid, and this is our first ever Prayer Meeting Wednesday in the theocratic states of America. It is difficult. I will remind you of the fundamental truth. You know, it used to be back in the old United States of America, the fundamental truth was all men are created equal. Well, it does say men. But now, in the theocratic states of America, the fundamental truth is to be found in the dissent to the Dobbs decision, where we find out from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. And that is true. Young woman, old woman, middle-aged woman, trans woman, cis woman, has no rights to speak of. So we don't want to hear anybody getting all uppity. Okay? Good. So we will act accordingly. Let's see, we all now have to be compulsorily Roman Catholic, so let me see if I can get that base covered. My daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes, abracadabra. Better? No? Not so much? Me either. But by way of getting us started, a little bit of a celebratory moment, if you will. I had communication earlier today, and we shall have a reading courtesy of the one and the only Lady B. Oh, and thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, half of Chris's Fuck the Theocracy challenge has been met, so we've got only another $50 to go on that, and then we'll be down to $699.95. $35. But let us begin with an uplifting reading from Lady B, and thank you to Lady B. She said to me, I wrote this the day Ketanji Brown Jackson was confirmed to the Supreme Court. I just heard that Justice Breyer is stepping down today, and she will be confirmed shortly thereafter, I'm assuming, to finish the term. Well, term ends tomorrow.
I felt this would be an appropriate way to herald her accomplishment. And it's officially copyrighted, too, so don't nobody take this down or transcribe it and credit it to anybody but Lady B. Title: A Credit to Her Race. Prayers to God calm her, to not let the slights and digs alarm her. Racists just shy of spitting in her face. Still, she is a credit to her race. Like her female ancestors before her, delivery of a human that tore her, the tiny eyes who now adore her, a credit to her race. For all the books that served as dates, for all the papers written next to dinner plates, she has what it takes, a credit to her race. From the toil of our ancestors with love from on high, to those who had doubted her and didn't want to let her try, the ground rapidly approaches them while she spreads her wings, and flies. A credit to her race. Her face will grace the plates our grandparents keep, mentions and memories of our heroes they speak, the tears of joy her father weeps. A credit to her race. Joy to the mother that bore her. Rightfully no man should abhor her, because when she speaks, she will maintain her pace. A credit to her race. The first, our first, will help decide the law of the land. She will do it because she can, with experience, compassion, and grace. A credit to her race. Held high by her brethren and God, descended from ancestors whose feet bear the scars, alone on alien land they did trod and thrive, despite the wickedness and work hours not logged. This is the truth, both written and traced. She is a credit to her race. She weathered the bullshit that black people face, her smile plastered tightly on her face, enduring vitriol and contempt history cannot erase. She is a credit to her race. She stared down the devil and won, but her acceptance battle has just begun, though the descendants of Africa will help her face. Hallelujah. May she live in God's grace. She is a credit to her race. Joy, joy, joy to the one who will never be outdone, who challenged the man and won, because to exceed expectations is no disgrace. A credit to her race. And when God calls our elders home, may they smile for the small victory we won. A black Supreme Court justice that we can actually embrace. Ketanji Brown Jackson. A credit to her race. Oh, Lady B, that's just beautiful. That is absolutely... And that needs to see wider distribution than simply a reading by your humble hostess. That is gorgeous. And I don't know if she's officially on the court yet or not, but I hope she came loaded for Bear or Brett or Handmaid or Neil with a K. I have a feeling she'll be much better at Balls and Strikes than old Balls and Strikes himself. Thank you for that. And from Matt in San Francisco, another moment of, another grace note, if you will. Perspective brings anger, Matt writes. Today we took a family trip to Sacramento for my father-in-law's taking of the citizenship oath. It was at a concert hall, indoor stadium-type venue. The line wrapped around the building, probably a good 3 or 4 New York City blocks. The sun was hot, beating down on all of us standing in line as it slowly snaked forward. As I stood with them in line, I watched as streams of people of all different hues, their variety of clothing hearkening to their country of origin, passed us headed to the back of the line. It was a beautiful sight to see as they joined that line, the experience of a culmination of what I am sure was a life-changing journey that was completed today as they raised their hand and became a citizen of the United States of America. It represented everything that is good about America, the dream that still millions have to get here and become a U.S. citizen. After reveling in this for a while, my mind shifted to how much damage the Republican Party has done to this nation. It just makes me so mad how far we have slipped, how much of what makes us such a unique place full of possibilities is being eaten away by small-minded people who are relentless in their pursuit to create a society that harkens back to an aristocracy that our founders fought a revolution to overthrow. I will continue to pursue my escape plan, Matt writes, but at the same time I am continuing in the fight for full equality in this crumbling empire. I owe it to myself, and I owe it to all those who have braved many hardships to get here and pursue their dreams. Equal equals equal. And P.S., one more registered Democrat in California. Matt, please, please convey my congratulations to your beloved husband and to his father and to your entire family. That must have been a stirring thing to behold. And yes, it stirs within the heart the desire to correct the errors, the monstrous errors that we have witnessed in just a few short days. Oh, thank you. Ralph says I've added $10 just for the heck of it. Okay, well, that means we got $40 to go on Chris's challenge. That's so helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Of course, in the last 24 hours, we've had the fallout from the explosive, to say the least, testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson yesterday, a Republican who desperately wanted to not be counted among the worst of the Republicans. I'm sure she'll still vote in 2024 to make sure that people know their place. She's young, white, exceedingly privileged. And she will probably not overcome that. It would be nice to think, but no. She never got that job in the maggot White House because she was a fire-breathing liberal, now, did she? But nonetheless, it was interesting to watch the maggots twist themselves into the world's most convoluted pretzels, trying to somehow take apart her testimony. In particular, I guess it shows that which part of her testimony really got to the soft and tender spots on him. It was the nitwit Nero trying to grab a Secret Service agent by the throat and trying to steer the presidential vehicle with those tiny hands. Still can't steer the beast. I'm still not chuckling over that. Well, she couldn't pause. He couldn't pause. She's a liar. She's a liar. She's Amber Heard 2.0. Yeah, I actually saw that. Amber Heard 2.0.
I mean, there's a wall of glass between the back seat and the front seat, and you can't do that in the Beast. We knows all about the Beast.
And then somebody pointed out that, well, he wasn't in the limousine. He was in the Secret Service up-armored SUV.
Well, it don't matter.
Saw where one jackanape said,
I got me a GMC Yukon. It's even bigger than that. And the feller of Donald Trump stature, couldn't no ways he could reach it.
There are actually photographs of him sitting in the front seat of that car. But nonetheless, you know, they they were deeply aggrieved by this news. And the fact of the matter is, if Nitwit Nero admitted it himself, they would say that wasn't really Nitwit Nero. That was a deep state mannequin or robot or. And he didn't ever possibly ever do none of that. Had a little harder time with the ketchup and the dish throwing. One idiot said,
"Well, this is just proof that it was a deep state secret service coup to keep him from being president for a second term."
The cognitive dissonance is deafening. Absolutely deafening. But, you know, here we are. So we have that. But it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so very kindly for jumping in. And Chris's challenge is met. And so that means we are down to 689.35 and then further down to 639.35. $639.35 finishes fundraising and qualifies as an actual Prayer Meeting Wednesday miracle. And then tomorrow would be fundraising free radio, which would be freaking awesome. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. So very helpful. But being Prayer Meeting Wednesday, let's do this real quick. They've got the bit in their teeth. And with the overthrow of, frankly, the Constitution, we need to understand Dobbs and Kennedy as another kind of coup, a judicial coup. Because it was. By taking away... Because remember, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. We need to get that on T-shirts. We really, really do. If I could do design, it's like one of my favorite songs says, "I can't wait to learn design and study overseas." Mm-hmm. Introduce me to that big blonde. She's got a look of Tuesday Weld. She's wearing Ambush and a French twist. Never mind. I would put that on a T. Maybe it just needs to be a black T-shirt with white letters. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. Yeah. But anyway... They've got the bit in their teeth. They know, even if we can't quite fully process it, the White Wing knows that we are a theocracy now, and they intend to absolutely carve it in stone. And so consequently, let's see here. There's a dude bro by the name of Andrew Torba. He founded Gab. He posted a meme that said, in all caps, "Say goodbye to your abortions, whores!" It was accompanied by a photograph of Brett Kavanaugh with red lasers shooting from his eyes. And he added, "The Christian takeover of our Christian country has begun." And, Andrew Torba is also a rather notorious anti-Semite. So he followed on that with, "Next we need to ban the barbaric act of circumcision, which is also a Jewish sacrament that was imposed on our men outside of their will as mere babies." Okay. Then there's Laura Looney. She ran for Congress once. And she still thinks she's going to Congress at some point.
And in celebrating Dobbs, she said, "Forget about the race-baiting holiday of Juneteenth. Today should be a national holiday instead. And I can't think of a better way to end the degeneracy of Pride Month than by overturning Roe versus Wade." Thinking is not one of Laura Looney's strong suits, because a lot of them babies she wants to force to be born are going to be gay, 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 gay. Or maybe they'll be gay and trans. Or gay and trans and any number of other people that they despise. Kind of hope they all are. Then there's Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert. Paul, pardon me, Gosar. He wanted to remind the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers that there's still so much more work to be done to return this country to God. Let's keep our momentum and push ever forward for him. And used a cross emoji. We're just getting started. Welcome to the new right. Welcome to America first. I can almost hear the sound of the goose-stepping boots outside the window. Yeah. Then there's the stupidest man on the internet, Jack Posobiec, who screamed, "Protect the churches!" And said that the Supreme Court was being protested by an Antifa pedophile. He was calling for a night of rage. Well, he was doing that right before he went back to hawking Mr. Meth Pillow meth pillows. "Huh, libs? Mad you can't kill babies anymore? Don't have a night of rage. Have a night of slumber with MyPillow.com promo code POSO." It ain't funny, but, well, there he is and here we are. Dipshit, it's not going to be a night of rage. It's going to be an age of rage. And I don't know what kind of sad, tired, self-hating thing is going to have sex with you. Or if you even actually have sex with human beings. But, I'm guessing a lot of women would actually think twice about letting you do the dirty. Because God knows, it could wind up really bad for them. Yeah, Matt Walsh, another toxic maggot, said, "It's a good thing the Supreme Court affirmed our right to conceal carry right before this night of rage you guys are planning." The night of rage is something that lives rent-free in maggot, spirochete-infested headspaces. Nick Fuentes, and we'll have some more Nick Fuentes in a minute, was started barking and grunting, "Defend your churches tonight!" And then added, you remember Nick Fuentes, right? The guy who said having sex with women is gay? Yeah. He said, "Women gave us original sin and white genocide." And he doesn't understand why he has a problem getting a date. And he amplified the message from some freak named Tyler Russell, who said, "Time to go further right, then even further. We're just getting started. Christian nationalism is the future." Future, 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 future. And Fuentes said, "God wins. We're going to ban abortion and open up the floodgates for God's grace, and our inevitable plan will be completed."
Derp. But Nick Fuentes being Nick Fuentes, get the hockey puck. And again, this is a guy who said it's gay to have heterosexual sex. Poster child for the incels. Yeah, well, I mean, at least they're telling us who they are, right? When they tell you who they are, believe them. This is not overreaction. They're telling us what their view, what their dream is for America.
Catholics were put on the court to overturn Roe versus Wade, and Jews stood in the way. And let me ask you this.
Yeah, by the way, did I mention he's a fucking Nazi? This is the little Nazi that Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball, marginal trailer queen, went on stage with. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people understand. I mean, I don't know if our side actually gets it when I talk about the completion of a theocracy in the United States that is based upon Roman Catholic doctrine and dogma. They do. They damned sure do. And the Jews got the Jews got in the way.
Catholics were put on the court to overturn Roe versus Wade, and Jews stood in the way. And let me ask you this. Who was the last justice that died to make this happen? I mean, not to be glib about it.
But he is, because he's a Nazi. He's a Jew hater.
But who is the last justice to die? Who is the last Jew that was replaced with a Catholic on the Supreme Court that allowed abortion to be overturned? Because guess what? If Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was a Jew, on the Supreme Court, if she didn't die last year so that Amy Coney Barrett, a Catholic woman, could be appointed in her place, Roe versus Wade would still be the law of the land. Think about that. If Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a Jewish woman, didn't die last year so that Amy Coney Barrett, a Catholic woman, could be appointed to the bench, we would still have Roe versus Wade. Now you tell me that this is a Judeo-Christian country. Now you tell me that this is a Judeo-Christian movement. You tell me that it doesn't matter that you have a lot of these Jewish people in government.
You know what? I should have issued a trigger warning and a content warning before I ran this clip. I'm so sorry that this is part of the fabric of our nation now. It grieves me. It breaks my heart. But maybe it's not a matter of now, part of our nation's fabric now. Maybe it's been there all along. I think Jewish people probably know it has been. That's why I've never understood. Well, you remember years ago? I mean, it was during the time that this program's been in existence, but John Hagee, the corpulent gospel sharp from some who owns a humongous ranch somewhere down near San Antonio, would go trundling and galumphing across the stage, telling hungry people to starve. Well, he founded an organization called QIFI. Citizens United for Israel. And I remember asking way, way, way back when, do Jews not understand why he's united for Israel? Because, see, he's looking for that great getting up morning when everybody, when all, you know, Jesus comes back. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. We can talk about this. When Jesus comes back, he's a millennialist, a post-millennialist. I don't know, that Darby-esque horse shit from the 17th or 18th or 19th, whenever it was. It's absolute garbage. Jesus is going to come back in his holy rolls, and he's going to say, you know, I got a score to settle with y'all. All of y'all Jews that didn't say I was the Messiah back then, well, you get a second chance now. Get on your fucking knees. Worship me! And then when they don't, because it's a when, not an if, when they don't, then, according to the sick mind of people like John Hagee, he's going to look at John Hagee and you know, the Grahams and all the people that follow and say, you know what? Kill the shit out of them. The only reason these right-wing so-called Christians are interested, even, and it's a fetishization, really, and I mean that within the sociological, psychosocial meaning of the word. I'm not talking about anything kinky. It is a fetish. The Jews are a fetish object for right-wing Christians. Traditional Christianity, in the form of like the Greek Orthodox Church and the Roman Church, they have just plain old-fashioned hated Jews and slaughtered them for all they were worth. You know, pogroms here, pogroms there, the blood libel. Jews are poisoning wells. Jews use Christian baby blood in making their matzah. I mean, just filthy shit. You know, things like the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, which still makes the rounds to this day, even though it's well over 100 years old. But that's been their traditional gig. But they came up with a new twist on the evangelical side of things, wherein they profess a love for the Jews and want all the Jews to be ingathered to Israel so that when Jesus comes back, they can go Jew hunting. I mean, it's genocidal. It's disgusting. But nonetheless, there are people in Israel who cuddle right up to the likes of John Hagee. I don't know whatever happened to Queefy, but, you know, it's still there. And now we have a new generation in the form of, a Nazi like Nick Fuentes.
Tell me that it doesn't matter after a decision like this. Tell me that with a straight face, that it doesn't matter that we had a court that had four Jewish people on it, and we had subtract one Jewish woman and increase one Catholic woman, and now Roe versus Wade is overturned, and 100 million Americans will live in states with no abortion because of that change, because we had a Jewish woman and now we have a Catholic woman. Tell me religion doesn't matter. Tell me that this dispute between Judeo and Christian doesn't matter. It absolutely matters. It makes all the difference. Clearly. This is why it's Christian nationalism. We need a government of Christians. We need a conservative movement, a nationalist movement led by Christians that obey the Bible and obey God and serve Jesus Christ. Tell me why we need people in government that don't serve Jesus Christ. Is that the argument?
And curiously, you know, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley, who recently won her primary, declared in some gospel sharp house the other day what was the quote? I'm sick of this separation of church and state stuff. The state ain't supposed to tell the church what to do. The church is supposed to tell the state what to do. Well, guess what? The church just did. And they're six serene, sublime, supreme, most puissant, dread sovereign Catholic majesties of the court did their bidding. Nick Fuentes, Nazi that he is not wrong in that regard. He's a sickening anti-Semite. He's a Nazi. He's a fascist. But he at least recognizes his own.
Well, here, Nick, here's why we need Jewish people in government that don't serve Jesus. Sorry, you're never going to win that argument. You're never going to convince me that we need people in government that don't serve Jesus Christ, the Son of God.
Got mit uns, y'all. Got mit uns. And again, let me make something abundantly clear. Well, you know, he's just a far right wackadoodle.
No. No. This is the mainstream of the Republican Party, and it has been for ages. From time to time, when Scott and I take our little wanders down memory lane, what do we find? Well, we find the John Birch Society, founded by old Pappy Koch, or funded at least, who as far back as the 1950s were saying that Dwight D. Eisenhower was a commie. They said Ronald Reagan was a commie. Gerald Ford was a commie. Richard Nixon was a commie. This is just the more out-of-the-closet fascist version. This is anti-Semitism on the march. This is fascism in real time. This is the thinking that Clementine Caligula aligned himself with. These are the people who were carrying AR-15s on January 6th who didn't want to go through the magnetometers because they knew work afoot.
They're not here to hurt me. I'm the fucking president. I want to go to the Capitol.
You'll never convince me of that. Insofar as there's one God, and he has one son, and there is one way to salvation and one way to the truth.
You know, here's the thing. This guy thinks he's saved. This fascist. This Nazi. This Christian thinks that he has a harp and a halo waiting for him in the great hereafter. He thinks the pearly gates are going to be flung wide for him when he enters as a dead virgin. Really sooner rather than later. And that he's going to be told, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." This isn't just some right-wing wackadoodle out there. He's well-funded, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah. He's got a platform, and he has, God alone knows, how many followers. You know he's big with the Patriot Front boys, you know, the 31 guys who wanted to wreak mayhem and murder and madness and on that pride celebration in Coeur d'Alene. They're his homies, and he is theirs. We do not know how much shit we're in, but by all means, you know, let's make sure we circle up the firing squad and go hunting for people who aren't sufficiently ideologically pure on our side.
Then that's the way that the people running our society and writing the laws need to be, and no other way. And that's not hateful, and that's not prejudice.
Yeah, it fucking is.
If anything, it's the opposite. You can only love your country if you want to have people running it that love God and love this world and love people. And the only people that are like that are, the only people as Christians we know that can be like that are fellow Christians. That's it. So this Judeo-Christian thing's got to stop. We don't live in a Judeo-Christian country, or at least if we do, we no longer want to live in that country. We want to live in a Christian country. We want to live in a Christian country with Christian rulers and Christian legislators and Christian judges and Christian law and Christians.
And just out of curiosity, what happens to those of us who aren't? Because I'm pretty sure the Christian judges and the Christian lawyers and the Christian cops and the Christian senators and the Christian governors and the Christian representatives, yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't have any room in their Christian country for the likes of me, for anyone in the LGBTQQQIA+ community. I'm pretty sure there's no
room in that Christian America for Muslims. He's already said there's no room for Jews. There's no room for Hindus. There's no room for Sikhs. There's no room for Jains, for Buddhists, for Shintoists, for animists practicing faith traditions that are thousands and thousands and thousands of years older than his mewling, puking godling. No room at the inn, as it were. But this is who they are, and they are telling us. And yet, somehow or another, even though they've been telling us for a generation or more, certainly for decades, what has recently happened still managed to happen. And the Supreme Court building is, you know, still there. Not that I'm saying that it shouldn't be, but it's still there. And the six supreme, sublime, serene, most puissant, dread sovereign Catholic majesties dine in peace and comfort and quiet and joy for all the precious little fetuses that they've saved. In the name of Jesus! Right? And a little Nazi like Nick Fuentes goose steps on. So, last Friday, when Dobbs came down, a little noticed press release came out from the Heritage Foundation, braying about something called the 2025 Presidential Transition Project. The Heritage Foundation. And it's all tax-free, hallelujah. I guess has pulled together a gang of Nick Fuentes's, a bunch of voter suppression groups, anti-LGBTQ hate groups, cue-ball groups, maggot groups, Christian Nazi nationalist groups. And their goal, again, they're telling us out loud, is to position the movement to take the reins of government after Republicans sweep to victory in the 2024 presidential election. A former MAGA White House official by the name of Paul Danz is leading the effort. The Heritage Foundation brayed, the 2025 Presidential Transition Project is focused on two key fronts: preparing the next administration with conservative policy recommendations and the properly vetted and trained personnel needed to defeat the administrative state, implement those policies, and take back America. Way at the top of this Presidential Transition Project is the Alliance Defending Freedom, the judicial legislative chop shop that led the charge that resulted in the fact that from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of in the United States of America. But standing side by side and shoulder to shoulder with the Alliance Defending Freedom, why look, it's the American Legislative Exchange Council. ALEC. You know, one of whose members is Joe of the Manchin Born. Who else? Well, like I said, the Alliance Defending Freedom, the America First legal outfit, American Accountability, the American Accountability Foundation, American Center for Law and Justice, American Legislative Exchange Council, previously mentioned, American Moment, the American Principles Project, the Center for Renewing America, the Claremont Institute, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. By the way, the Claremont Institute, that's the cesspit out of which crept, crawled, slithered, and slimed one John Eastman, who, if there is anything left resembling justice in the United States, will be indicted for sedition if Merrick Garland can, you know, find the time. The Competitive Enterprise Institute. Oh, and look, there they are, the concerned, self-hating women for America. I added the self-hating part. The Conservative Partnership Institute. The Defense of Freedom Institute. Oh, look, there they are, the Family Research Council of Louisiana Stan, led by Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates Perkins, who got his first email list by buying it from David Duke and the Klan. The First Liberty Institute, the Foundation for Government Accountability, FreedomWorks, the Leadership Institute, the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America Bunch, the Texas Public Policy Foundation, because Republican public policy begins not in Washington, D.C., but in the arid, dusty, dry, barren, and deadly wastes of Texas. And then, of course, the Young America Foundation, because you got to have some youngins. They are moving rapidly to consolidate their gains. And there is more than ample reason to be so far past concerned about this that the light from concerned won't reach us for a million years. They mean it, y'all. They mean it. Lee in New York points out Christians supporting Israel. Jews who are waiting for Messiah have been waiting for thousands of years. Christians have said that Jesus is returning soon for 2,000 years. Some Jews want allies today, regardless of their reasons why. All I can say is if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. And don't be surprised when you find yourself scratching. And the fact of the matter is, we are going to see time after time after time stories like this where they move to consolidate their power. And you know, as the people charged with their participation in the putsch on January 6th drip, drip, drip out, I shouldn't be surprised, but still I wind up being surprised when I see, you know, who they were. Case in point, Bernard Joseph Sirr, S-I-R-R. A fellow citizen, Charlene, of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. Yeah, I know the whole name. Bernard Joseph Sirr is 47. He's from North Kingstown. He stands accused of taking part in the front line of the insurrectionists who were attacking Capitol Police on January 6th. Press release from the Department of Justice says he is seen pushing against the police line with his hand pressed against a police shield. He also participated in a struggle in which a group of rioters chanted, "Heave! Ho!" in unison as they moved together as a team against the officer. Here's what's a little bit disturbing.
a lot disturbing? It turns out there is only one nuclear power plant in Rhode Island. It is run by the Rhode Island Atomic Energy Commission at the University of Rhode Island's Bay Campus in Narragansett. And Bernard Joseph Sir, aged 47, is a nuclear facilities engineer at that nuclear reactor. And he's been charged with felony, civil disorder, and physical violence. He gets paid some $82,009 as a nuclear facilities engineer. And, well, I guess he's kind of like Homer Simpson. He's a, at least by his own description on his Facebook page, he's a reactor operator facility engineer. And he took some personal leave from January 5th to January 7th. Because he was going to be busy January 6th. The Boston Globe reached out to Jeff Davis, the assistant director of the Rhode Island Nuclear Science Center. Jeff Davis, ironically named at the very least, said, "We really don't have much in the way of comment. If he participated in the protest, that's okay. It doesn't have anything to do with our security efforts. We're doing what they guide us to do." Charlene? Sister? Might want to just, like, maybe map out a hasty route out of... Well, but then again... Jeff Davis, by way of an excuse, said, "We're a very small agency. We have 8.6 full-time equivalent employees. This is someone I worked with for years, and I have a sense of his character. We don't see him as a threat." This really didn't go over well with one Laura Hart, who's the spokesperson for the Rhode Island Department of Administration. Laura Hart said, "Jeff Davis is speaking for himself and not representing the agency. Mr. Sir has been placed on paid administrative leave." Oh, my... God, it's almost like he's a cop who shot a black guy and he's getting a paid vacation for doing it. Only in this case, he's a white guy who attacked the very fundamental basis of constitutional governance in the United States. He's on paid administrative leave. What the fuck does a nuclear engineer have to do to get fired? He showed up in court in a pair of seen better days khakis and a short sleeve plaid shirt. Oh, well, everybody can't wear a Brooks Brothers suit for their day in court for participating in a putsch. But at least there's some brown in his shirt, so there's that. Meanwhile, the magistrate who heard his arraignment, one Magistrate Sullivan, U.S. Magistrate, turned him loose on a $10,000 unsecured personal recognizance bond, because he promised to be a good boy and show up in court in D.C. on July the 7th. Can I just take a moment for a what the fuck? And, you know, he's not a was a facilities engineer. He's an is a facilities engineer. He's the second Rhode Islander to be indicted for the putsch. Felony civil disorder and misdemeanor charges. And that wasn't even worth $15,000 bond. Well, you know, he's tall, he's white. We wouldn't want to keep him in jail. Who the fuck is this magistrate? I hate to keep saying it. But y'all, they're going to do it again? And again? And again? I mean, do you have anything for me? Do you have anything reassuring to maybe make me say, maybe I'm overreacting? They're not going to do it again. They learned their lesson. But I can't quite cleanse myself of the notion that they didn't learn shit except for the fact that they came within a hair on a gnat's ass of succeeding. I mean, basically it was down to one driver and one Secret Service officer, or we may have been watching semi-automatic weapons fire as Nitwit Nero galumphed through the halls of the Capitol with a shit ton of armed maniac maggots in tow to, you know, go and hang Mike Pence because he deserved it, according to the guy who was and never should have been president of the United States on January 6, 2021. Where are we? I mean, I know where I am in all of this. For a variety of reasons, I find myself in a state of extreme angst, worry, fear. But where are you? I mean, I have sort of some enhanced reasons for being that way. But where are you? Can you tell me? Let's run over to the stress line and see if I can get any help with this question. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. How are you?
Worried.
Yeah, me too. Boy, you laid that out. All those coalitions and all that planning that they have going on for 2025 there.
Yeah, and they got enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills.
That's some, I mean, you know, like 2 dozen at least, right?
Yeah.
That are all going to, like, just get in cahoots and consolidate. And that's, of course, you know, they run a trifecta, you know, 2024, so. A lot can happen between now and then, but you know, but just the absolute planning that they have in the works in the pipeline, and then you played Fuentes before that, because you know the dog caught the truck, and so now they got to, you know, glom on to something else. And actually, I mean, abortion was just one thing, so to speak, but now that that's, you know, they caught that truck, it's like they're just going to go after everything now. They're just going to
That's what happens to a horse with the bit in its teeth. All reason, all rationality is just, it's just go. And who cares what gets trampled?
Yeah. I mean, I you know, Garland, the FBI, so the FBI, CIA, everybody, they all know. I mean, they see the chatter. They see all this chatter, all this planning that you mentioned before. I'm sure that they're aware of it, obviously, you know, because they're paying attention, and they're probably like, damn, you know, you know, I don't see any a governmental body or anybody out there that's going to try to stop this before it happens type thing. I don't know if they legally can. I don't know, but boy, they're really like Fuentes, man. Those are some freaking fighting words right there, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, those are some camp building words.
Yeah. So I don't know if Garland's going to go after Trump, do you think?
You
really think he's going to go after him? I mean, he could right now do it.
Yeah, but I mean, he could. He could. Monkeys could fly out my butt any minute now, but...
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he could.
I don't...
And I understand. You know, Kevin, I understand. It's a slow process. It's a deliberative process. The DOJ hates to go after anybody that they don't feel like they've got a lead pipe cinch case against. Because I guess the conventional wisdom is that the only thing worse than charging nitwit Nero with the crimes which we think he obviously committed would be to charge him and him be acquitted. Because then right. the hogs really would be in the tunnel as if they already aren't. So I get that. But the fact of the matter is, time is not on his side. Time is not on Merrick Garland's side. There's an election coming in November. Ever so many states have been gerrymandered within an inch of their lives. Voter suppression has been given the green light by our supreme, maximum, serene, puissant, dread sovereign Catholic majesties on the Supreme Court. And what does that mean for November? It means that the only hope we have is getting out everybody with a sense of existential urgency. And even then, it's not guaranteed. Even then, it's not guaranteed. Yeah. So that means that the window of opportunity for Merrick Garland shrinks every day. And he does not have until January 20th, 2025. He's got until, well, honestly, he's got until around October, the end of September, tops. Because after that, the DOJ will say, well, you know, it might unfairly influence the election, so we certainly couldn't indict anybody then. Because we've been to that movie. We've heard that song, haven't we, Kevin?
Yeah, we have. You know, they need to hold everybody involved without bail. Of course, that would set up, you know, it's either you take it lying down or you're going to take it fighting. I mean, they really should just put everybody out without bail. I mean, that old on up. I mean, but after Trump, even Trump, I mean, just say, look, you know, put them in orange jumpsuits. Just say your trial will come. You know, you're too much of a risk to the country, you know, flight risk and security risk and all this other stuff. Of course, that would probably set it off. Just detaining him would, you know, if they ever detained him, like, you know, even a house arrest type thing, you know, but you can't have access to a computer or whatever, that type of thing.
You know, you mentioned flight risk. You mentioned flight risk, Kevin, and I'm just, you know, talking off the top of my head right now, but would it be the worst thing in the world if Nitwit Nero fled the country? Brazil,
no.
The Philippines... Russia.
He
couldn't run for president in 24, could he? And if there was an indictment waiting for him, if he set foot on American soil, it would certainly serve to keep him the hell away from here, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You know, though, I think they're ready to move on without him. Though, it sounds to me like this coalition, you know, they're gonna move on with or without him. You know, that coalition of 2025 you were talking about there. I mean, if, whether Trump's there or not, I mean, they've got their ducks in a row, it seems like, and they know what they want to do once they grab all three branches. And then, of course, you know, they already got the Supreme Court in the bag. And, you know, unless we somehow do something this election and able to keep the House and the Senate and, expand the court. It's the only way we're going to be able to do it is expand the court, obviously.
Or, you know, somebody screws their courage to the sticking place and introduces a bill of impeachment against, you know, Brat, et cetera. I saw an editorial, an op-ed piece today from the L.A. Times that with which I do not take issue, and it kind of grabbed me because, well, you don't see this kind of plain talk very often in the multimillionaire for-profit media. An opinion piece by Jackie Calmes, or Calmus, L.A. Times. Brett Kavanaugh's Roe vote proved it again. He has a truth problem. And Jackie Calmus opens, a columnist for the Times, opens it by saying, Brett Kavanaugh is a serial liar. And she's not wrong. Yeah.
Talking about his testimony before he was, when he was on the, when he was being considered for the Supreme Court.
Yeah. I mean, the neat thing about this op-ed piece is Ms. Kalmus brings the receipts because someone back when Susan Collins was meeting with Brat, someone took contemporaneous notes in that private meeting. And so we now know exactly what he said to her. Speaking to Susan Collins, Brett Kavanaugh said, and you know, carve this in stone, start with my record, my respect for precedent, my belief that it is rooted in the Constitution. And this is after she asks him squarely about Roe versus Wade and overturning it. Start with my record, my respect for precedent, my belief that it is rooted in the Constitution, it being Roe and the right to privacy, and my commitment and its importance to the rule of law. I understand precedent, and I understand the importance of overturning it. Roe is 45 years old. It has been reaffirmed many times. Lots of people care about it a great deal, and I've tried to demonstrate I understand real-world consequences. I'm a don't-rock-the-boat kind of judge.
He just lied right to her face.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't even care.
And the question is, and what really becomes kind of depressing for me is, will anybody do a damn thing about this?
Well, I don't know. She's been talking, right? That's about it, though, right?
Well, she's been talking. If you want to hail them into the Capitol to answer for lying to the Senate and lying to members of the Senate, the only way you can force that to happen is with a bill of impeachment.
Yeah. Well, at least make life miserable for these people. That's what I would do. You know, Kavanaugh. Who else? Barrett, right?
Yeah.
Who would they want to impeach? Kavanaugh and who else lied?
They
all did.
Yeah, Neil with a K.
Gorsuch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and boy. Yeah.
And there, and you know, for decades now, Slappy has been an impeachment waiting to happen.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And he got so comfortable, he felt like he could, because there are no ethics rules, no canons of judicial conduct for members of the Supreme Court. So consequently, he just did what he wanted, including things that would get any other judge at least placed on leave and quite possibly bounced from the bench.
You know, if the wheels of justice somehow get moving here with all this momentum in the last few days, and, you know, people start getting detained or whatever and get served or whatever, and as long as they've got the federal enforcement to back it up, that won't fracture, you know, the marshals and the FBI, and, you know, eventually, though, I mean, some of these people where they are, that you're going to have state and local law enforcement involved in getting these people. So there's that. If that can hold, you don't, you know, and they do their job, and they back up the, you know, they back up the the lawyers and the justices that hand down these decisions, the enforcement end of it stays, may have a chance, you know. But, you know, there's a, I mean, look at, you know, Mussolini with his black shirts, right? What do you have, like 20,000, like a 20,000 man army?
Yeah, the bully boys.
So, I mean, what do you got in this country? More than 20,000, that's for sure, right? If you, well, if, you know, they're coordinating.
If January 6th is any indication, way more.
Yeah, millions. Millions. I mean, at least in the hundreds of thousands, I would say. I mean, what level everybody will go to do what they're going to do, who knows, but. So there's that. But anyway, okay. I think I beat that horse enough.
I don't think that's possible, Kevin. I mean, we've got to hammer this day in and day out. There are three illegitimate, arguably perjurious justices sitting on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is in a shambles. The Supreme Court has no credibility. Zero. None. Zip. Zilch. Nada. Niente.
No credibility whatsoever. Nope. It's completely devoid of credibility. I mean, they're just making up things out of thin air. They're, you know, whatever they want to side with, they'll just create some kind of, I don't know, they'll bend the laws or whatever just to make it look, a hand down a decision. Yeah, they get the impeachment going, and of course, you know, you got to convict them in the Senate, but just make life miserable for them. That's what I would start doing. And
right, yeah. No no justice, no peace. It's pretty simple.
All right, I'll let somebody else get on here.
All right, Kevin, give our best to Tracy, please.
Yes, I will.
All right, y'all have a great night.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, you too. Yeah, bye.
And that's our buddy Kevin calling from Massachusetts. Always good to hear from him. And the points he makes are solid. And the sense that this whole thing is, you know, I mean, movie reference. Haven't made one of those this evening yet, have I? I love that movie, L.A. Confidential. I watch it every year or so. The performances are just so good. And that concept, my God, how old is this movie? It's not a spoiler. Rollo Tomasi, the guy who gets away with it. And, of course, he always gets away with it because there's some level of institutional corruption that lets him get away with it. And, you know, for being such an institutionalist... It's hard to imagine that Merrick Garland is just sitting on his hands. But it seems like that's what he is doing. Lady V pointing out, Brett lied right to Susan Collins' face, and she knew it, but she didn't care. Because she is first and foremost a Republican, and everything else can hang fire, Lady V. We know that, don't we? It's not like that's a controversial position for us to take. And Ron and Raleigh pointing out something that I've also got in the stack. The sick and twisted progeny of Dobbs has already... taken to the highways and byways. Yesterday in Talabama, the attorney general there, a miserable shit-eating theocrat by the name of Steve Marshall, went into federal court. And the reason he went into federal court is that particular federal court had enjoined Alabama's law forbidding medical treatment, gender-affirming care for trans kids. And with a mouthful of Dobbs, hot and fresh, he went spewing into the federal court, telling the federal court to lift its injunction of Alabama's hateful law. And he said that the reason the court should lift the injunction is because of Dobbs, because Dobbs holds that gender-affirming care for transgender kids is not in the Constitution. Basically, he claimed that since the court rejected the idea that abortion isn't protected under the 14th Amendment because it's not deeply rooted in the nation's history, you can say the same thing about gender-affirming care for trans kids. Or for that matter, for anyone in Alabama. Anyone. Now, remember, a violation of this law means up to 10 years in prison in a shithole prison in Alabama and a fine of up to $15,000. It is only not in effect yet because of this one lone injunction. And I guess there are some simpletons out there who only thought that Dobbs had to do with abortion. It has to do with privacy. Turns out it has to do with the right of loving parents to provide loving care for their children. This is, you know, originalism is already a fraud. We've demonstrated that time and time and time again. This is originalism on a heady cocktail of meth, you know, crank, badass stomped all over coke, the brown acid from Woodstock, and, you know, a soupçon of horse tranquilizer. Because they are barking mad in the Confederate States of America, and especially in the heart of Dixie. And since there's no history, no deeply rooted American history, a lot of work being done there by deeply rooted, wouldn't you say? How do you measure the depth of the roots of people who had to hide in the shadows for centuries? But yeah, here we are. And by the way, just a little bit of paranoia. Then I hate to even whisper this into the ear of the universe because she'll be barking and grunting and braying about it in no time flat. And by she, I mean it. I mean Marjorie Traitor Gangrene Cueball, Marginal Trailer Queen. Because remember, she was bitching about a nationwide tampon shortage when last we checked in with her, and she said it's because there are tampon dispensers in men's rooms now. Because there's no reason for there to ever be a tampon dispenser in a men's room. I mean, there could never be a situation where someone might look at a guy and say, "Hun, before I forgot, they're at home. Could you run into the men's room and just, you know, pop a couple of quarters into the machine and crank me out a tampon?" Nah, that could never happen. And of course, there are trans men and non-binary people who, you know, use the men's room. God, the bathroom politics. Honest to Jesus, on December the 31st, 1999, when we were all breathlessly waiting for the clock to flip over to midnight, January 1, 2000, and all of the computers were going to die, and the power was going to go out, and there were going to be hordes of angry zombies in the streets. I did not have the bathroom wars of the third decade of the 21st century on my goddamn bingo card. More's the pity. Shit. But no, I'm a little paranoid because there is a nationwide shortage of injectable estrogen. And like I said, Marginal Trailer Queen will be blaming the trans women, keeping the real women who really need it from being able to get it. Basically, there's two forms of injectable estrogen that's available in the United States. One is called estradiol valerate. The other one is called estradiol cypionate. Estradiol valerate's been hard to get for a while. But estradiol cypionate, which, you know, I use. And if this was not real estradiol cypionate, I could not be rattling in its little pink box, even as we speak. Is made by Pfizer. Not exactly a fly-by-night outfit. But the only... It can't be had. My pharmacist over at Kroger in Oak Hill, darling woman, she knows how desperately important this is to me, and I pop by every couple of days, and she goes, nope, nowhere to be found. Wonder why. Of course, there's no deeply rooted legal or historical tradition of giving people like me injectable estrogen because, well, injectable anything wasn't much around in 1787, that hot summer. So there's, I don't have a legal right to it. Certainly not a constitutional one. I'm beginning to think more and more that the Joy in Ann Arbor's interpretation of that line from the dissent may be the correct one. From the moment of fertilization, a woman has next to no rights. Joy took that to mean that from the moment she was conceived, she had next to no rights. Last night, Darlene built upon that with the astute observation of what next to no rights could mean for a woman suspected of being pregnant. No right against self-incrimination. No right to be secure in her person, papers, and effects. That's the Fourth and the Fifth Amendments. No right to freedom of speech, you know, to be able to tell her doctor when her last menstrual period was. Now they're barking and grunting and braying and hooting about Plan B and about the abortion pill. And while the administration says, no, no, take a breath. No state can ban the importation of the abortion pill. In the cold Civil War, getting hotter by the minute, of the early third decade of the 21st century, you just watch Alabama. This is no less nullification than it was in the nullification crisis of the mid-19th century. Federal government passes a law, and the states say, nuh-uh, we ain't got to follow your federal fucking laws. And there we are. They have unleashed a flood tide of hell and horror on the entire country. And I hate to say it, but listen, y'all. I appreciate the kindness of and determination of states like California, New York, etc., who have said that Connecticut, who have said that they will not be party to any prosecutions or any extraditions of any of any anyone back to hate states for prosecution for getting an abortion, but or just simply being able to provide an abortion. But listen, listen. We're talking about big and relatively wealthy states. But I hate to tell you, y'all ain't got the capacity. Did you hear in the clip earlier the braying about 100 million people will not be able will be under the theocracy? I got to think that there's more than, well, no, that means 250 million are theoretically theocracy-free until such time as the Supreme Court, you know, our supreme, majestic, serene, dread sovereign, most puissant Catholic majesties declare otherwise. Am I wrong? Got a counter-argument to that? And in a nation in the midst of an economic proto-meltdown, how are we going to get a poor woman from West Virginia to somewhere where she can receive reproductive care? How are you going to get a poor woman from the depths and backwaters of Mississippi, Stan, to a women's reproductive health care center in New York or California? How, is the Underground Railroad already set up? Is it funded enough? Is it prepared to deal with zealous pigs trying to stop women from moving between states? From the point of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. We're not ready. Maybe part of that is because we deluded ourselves. Oh, I mean, we saw the handwriting on the wall, many, many take Lufarsin. But somehow or another, we thought, there'll be, you know, I guess we were like an audience of some Greek tragedy, expecting the Deus Ex Machina to swing out from stage right, or left, really, and bring out the God who would make everything be okay. Turns out there wasn't one of those stage left. There wasn't one of those stage anywhere. We said for years on this program, they want it all. Back then, maybe we were just maybe we thought we were talking about something financial. But they want it all. Well, it's kind of like what Matt in San Francisco said in his note at the beginning of the program. Equal equals equal. All means all. All means all. Everything, every right. Until there are no rights left in this country save for the rights that were enshrined by the original framers of the Constitution. You know, rights for straight, Christian, white, property owning, includes women and slaves, men. Those rights, they'll protect. Why do you think you get D.C. versus Heller? The vast majority of firearms owners in this country are straight, white, Christian men. It all seems so abundantly clear in hindsight. But yeah, Ron and Raleigh was right about the AG of Alabama. You know how that lying fuck Samuel Alito swore on his mother's grave that his bullshit decision on Dobbs would not be used for anything other than abortion? Well, that was so much crap. And the Alabama Attorney General proved it by citing Sammy Bad Breath Dobbs' decision. Ron and Raleigh points out, I guess Attorney General Marshall wanted to be the first. Thing is, he will not be the last. You know, from Montgomery, Alabama, you could probably hear the screaming coming from Austin, Texas, as Ken Paxton said, God damn it! He got there first! Fucking Alabama! Now we're second behind Alabama, and we're fucking Texas! Yeah, Ron adds, you know what's deeply rooted? Let's see, 256 years, is that deeply rooted enough for you? Slavery's deeply rooted. You see John Cornholio calling for overturning Plessy? They said he was just joking. I read that story, and I want to be fair about it. He wasn't calling for overturning Plessy. What he was doing was really stupidly criticizing people for saying Roe was precedent and you should leave precedent alone. In particular, he was punking Barack Obama. Because Barack Obama tweeted last Friday,
today, the Supreme Court not only reversed nearly 50 years of precedent, it relegated the most intensely personal decision somehow couldn't make to the whims of politicians and ideologues, attacking the essential freedoms of millions of Americans.
So John Cornholio, the second most powerful man in the Senate of the United States, I mean, if, for instance, the earth was to open up and swallow a turtle, John Cornholio would immediately become, most likely, minority leader. And he subtweeted, or quote-tweeted, Barack Obama and said, now do Plessy versus Ferguson, Brown versus Board of Education. Because this is the grunting argument of the right wing that you know, precedent doesn't mean it never gets overturned. Otherwise, Brown versus Board of Education wouldn't have overturned Plessy. Plessy, with its separate but equal standard, was, of course, the handmaid of Jim Crow laws and segregation all over America, not just in the Deep South. Whites-only restrooms, whites-only water fountains, whites-only lunch counters, whites-only restaurant seating, whites-only schools. And, of course, there was a withering dissent, as I've mentioned before. I think it's probably the favorite dissent of our friend Dave in Kentucky Stan. Justice Harlan wrote a blistering jeremiad against the majority in Plessy that provided at least a waypoint toward overturning it. But the point is not well taken from John Cornholio. It only shows that he can't recognize that there is a difference between overturning a manifest evil and overturning the rights of more than half of the citizens of this country who, with the stroke of a pen, became non-citizens. He is a shit eater, John Cornholio, of the worst corn and peanut laden stench. But once he caught a sufficient amount of hell for saying now do Plessy and Brown versus Board of Education, and people took that to mean that he was endorsing Plessy, which, you know, I think if you loaded him up with sodium pentothal, he might be. He, quote, tweeted himself, said, thank goodness some SCOTUS precedents are overruled. Somebody tried to explain it away for John Cornholio and said, let's help out less intelligent fellow Americans. Plessy stood as the law of the land longer than Roe. That was his point. Now, if liberals are arguing Brown versus Board of Ed was wrongly ruled because of longstanding precedent, then they should openly say so. Shut the fuck up. Because you might recall that there has been a goddamn parade of right-wing Republican Federalist Society potential maniacs through the Senate Judiciary Committee who, when asked the simple question, do you believe Brown versus Board of Education was rightly decided, said,
Senator, I cannot answer a question on something like that because it might come back before the court.
Really, Justice Hale? And hanging women for witchcraft might come back before the court, too? Sure. But that's what all of these right-wing judicial confirmations are. They are exercises in obfuscatory mendacity. Hoo-wee! Lordy. That's an adjective-noun combination you don't hear on for-profit media talk radio every day. Now, is it? Obfuscatory mendacity. I think I'm going to have to collect that one and put it on the mantelpiece. That's almost as good as a top-notch German compound noun. But seriously, we've seen it. I can't remember which justice it was. It may have been all of them. Refusing to answer the question as to whether Brown versus Board of Education was rightly decided. Of course, anytime you mention Brown versus Board of Education, it is also instructive to mention the fact that, public schools in America are more segregated now than they were in 1954. Brown has its own problems because you run across that language about desegregating schools with all deliberate speed, which if you actually are a practitioner of the art of word knowing, you figure out right quick means all slow speed. See how the magic works? But John Cornholio did get burnt. Somebody posted a picture of a black man drinking from a colored water fountain. And there's a fountain labeled white next to it. And, of course, the white fountain is of much better quality. And a dude asked him, you miss this sort of thing? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I get it, Ron. But, and Cornholio is a, sure enough, no kidding shit bird. Where are we fundraising wise? We are at $639.35. And coming up on the second hour of the program, if we could get down to, if we could do another $339.35 and get down to just having a regular fundraising goal for tomorrow, that might be extremely helpful. Other news of the day. I saw the breaking news earlier. R. Kelly, who has been accused by, Lord. Well, he was convicted today, and he got 30 years for sex trafficking and racketeering. This comes a day after Ghislaine Maxwell got 20 for soliciting little girls for Jeffrey Epstein. Off the subject, Ron asks, I would like you to put on your lawyering bonnet and answer a question. I cannot put on my lawyering bonnet. That would be improper. Perhaps you've heard that today R. Kelly was sentenced to 30 years for making small ones out of big ones. Or 30 years making small ones out of big ones. My question is, how much actual time will he serve? He's 55 years old. I think maybe 10 years plus 5 years on parole. What do you think? I think being, and this is in no wise a defense, I think it's much more likely he does the whole, well, at least 20. If you take, and Billable Rick is far more conversant with things like the sentencing guidelines and the like, but if you factor in some good time, if there's any good time to be had, maybe he does 20. I don't think, but I don't think he sees the outside before 10 years, unless he gets turned loose like Bill Cosby did. But I don't think that particular set of circumstances that got Bill Cosby turned loose exists in R. Kelly's case. Just my layman's guess. And going back to July of 2020, not quite 2 years ago, but very nearly, a publication called Southern Spaces, and serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department this evening, Ralph sends this along. The Supreme, it's titled, The Supreme Court is Overturning Brown versus Board of Education. And the thesis of the article by Steve Suits is the U.S. Supreme Court is slowly but surely overturning Brown versus Board of Education, which outlawed state support for unequal segregated public schools. Citing religious freedom, Chief Justice John Roberts, back in 2020, led the court to sanction religious discrimination in public-financed private schools. The decision further dismembers the nation's commitment to achieving equitable, effective public education for all. And that Espinoza versus Montana Department of Revenue, that was the precursor to this nightmare in Maine. Remember, school choice is a fetish object of the right wing. And that's a euphemism for resegregation and using taxpayer dollars to fund religious huckster schools. And the article points out today, most students attending private schools are in religious schools, and most religious schools are effectively segregated and exclusionary by race. And so, as far back as 2020 with Espinoza, well, looky here. The Supreme Court said, yeah, as long as it's segregated de facto, but not de jure, you're cool. And there are some forms of school resegregation, school choice programs in place in Montana, South Dakota, Kansas. This was 2020, mind you. Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Stan, Arkansas, Stan, Tennessee, Stan, Mississippi, Stan, Alabama, Georgia, Stan, Florida, Stan, South Carolina, Stan, North Carolina, Stan, Virginia, Stan, Pennsylvania, Bama, Stan, Ohio, Taliban, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, New Hampshire, Maryland, and Rhode Island. It ranges from tax credit programs to education savings account programs to voucher programs, tax credit and voucher programs, tax credit and education savings account programs, and educational savings account and voucher programs. And that's before we even got the main case. So now add main to that. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. 27 states. 27 states have various and sundry forms of resegregation thanks to our majestic, supreme, most puissant, serene, dread sovereign, Catholic majesties of SCOTUS. Okay, so we're making some progress. Bernadette, God bless you, sister. You dealt with that damn 35 cents for me. Thank you. So we're down to 334. Our dear friend Christopher via Venmo took us down to 324. Don't want to miss out on jumping in. Thank you, Christopher. So we've got, 624. We've got $624 to go to finish June. I don't know if we could raise that in 1 hour. It would, like I said, be a miracle if we could. The deacons are getting a little bit weary passing the plate, but I think they can afford to be on their feet a little while longer. They, as long as they're walking, they're further away from me. God, they went after them pinto beans and cornbread with a will. So, by the way, the lines are open. If you would like to jump in and do some conversating, you're more than welcome on this prayer meeting Wednesday. Skype line's open. Bob Kincaid Horn. Lord God, someday I'm just going to spend a day clearing that out. And then the stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-843-THE-HORN, 844-THE-HORN, if you like to spell with your telephone or something. And, suffice to say, I relish and cherish the conversation. Oh, look! This smells like a defense being set up. At one point in time, Mick Mulvaney was the chief of staff to Nitwit Nero. I guess he was the third. Let's see, there was Rince Penis was the first one. Then came McMasters. Then came Mulvaney. And then came Mark Meadows. Is it typical for a president of the United States to have four chiefs of staff in as many years? Well, for some reason or another, over at CNN, they got a call out on the blower to Mick Mulvaney, and he said, "Why, sure, I'd love to come on and talk about those heady days in the Trump White House." No, Ralphs, the deacons aren't giving me the stink eye so much, but, well, beans will be beans. It has nothing to do with the eye. You know what I mean? Trying to keep the program out of the gutter here. But Jake Tapper suggested that Cassidy Hutchinson must have struck a nerve. That was Jake Tapper's word. Her pettifogger put out a statement saying that she stands by every bit of her testimony. She retracts none of it. And, of course, maggots were attacking her, but none of them were under oath like she was. You might recall Mick Mulvaney started out at the Office of Management and Budget, fucking the people of the United States.
And Mulvaney had previously tweeted, "A stunning 2 hours. One, Trump knew the protesters had guns. Two, he assaulted his own security team. Three, there may be a line from Proud Boys to the White House. Four, top aides asked for pardons. Five, the commission thinks they have evidence of witness tampering. This is a very, very bad day for Trump," said Mick Mulvaney, who at one point in time, if Trump had his head so far up Trump's ass that if Nitwit Nero yawned, you could see Mick Mulvaney's smiling face. And we need to talk a little bit about Tony Ornato, but let's deal with this first. Because I said that this looked like the beginnings of maybe something resembling a defense. And Mulvaney answered Tapper's question, what did you make of her recollection that people were trying to tell him things and he was sitting on the sofa, Mark Meadows was, scrolling on the phone, unresponsive, especially when they were trying to tell Meadows about the threat of violence. And Mick Mulvaney said, "Well, that struck me personally. That's my sofa. I use that sofa. It was my office, my fireplace he was sitting by." Really? Mine? Yeah. Hmm. "I understand exactly what the dynamics are there. The visual image of Cassidy coming to the door, maybe with Pat there, or Pat there a little afterward, and trying to talk to Mark and Mark not even looking up, according to Cassidy, and just staring at his phone and they have to interrupt him to make sure he's paying attention, sends a disturbing message of what the West Wing was like." Oh, shit, Mick. Come on. You can polish that turd till hell freezes over. It ain't never gonna be no diamond. "I was texting with a colleague of mine in the West Wing at the time and said, look, was Mark completely incompetent or having a nervous breakdown? The response was, it was a little bit of both." Well, Mick, buddy, would you like to have a subpoena and come and tell the J6 Commission all about it, hun? The West Wing was clearly broken, and the testimony yesterday actually made me feel bad for some of the good people still there who had to work in that environment with the chief of staff who was so obviously disengaged again, according to what Cassidy said yesterday. Very disturbing for me to hear that as a former chief of staff who did absolutely nothing wrong, and was probably the best chief of staff that anybody ever had the chief of staff of in America now, today, forever, under God. Amen. Jesus God, these maggots. Because under Mick Mulvaney, it run like a well-oiled machine. You know, a manure spreader is a well-oiled machine. Not saying, just saying. But I guess they're setting up his nervous breakdown defense when... Oh, come on, who are we kidding? When Merrick Garland gets around to indicting him. Oh, God. Oh, that's a knee slapper when Merrick Garland gets around to doing something. Oh, no, man. Yeah, he may do something. Maybe he'll find some other black politician to charge with some bullshit political corruption offense. But when Merrick Garland gets around to indicting Mark Meadows. I mean... It's prayer meeting Wednesday. You can't indict Mark Meadows. He is an ordained minister of the gospel. Back when he was running for Congress from North Carolina, he'd tell anybody who'd listen, "Now listen here, I'm going to Congress because I'm an ordained minister of the gospel." Still trying to figure out. Well, never mind. And I'm sorry I'm so doggone cynical. Kevin may have been right. They may have moved on from him, and they're ready to
the maggots are ready to line up behind Ron Monkey Up DeSantis. I mean, he's got the street cred. He was elected governor of Florida with the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis. Well, over there at that right-wing birdcage liner, the Washington Examiner. Yeah, this is going to stoke the stroke. They said that Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony yesterday ought to ring the death knell for former President Donald Trump's political career. In short, Hutchinson was a conservative Trumpist true believer and a tremendously credible one at that. She did not overstate things, did not seem to be seeking attention, and she was very precise about how and why she knew what she related about and which testimony was firsthand and which was secondhand but able to be corroborated. They then wrote, Trump is a disgrace, and added, Republicans have far better options in 2024. I wonder if one of those is Liz Cheney, those far better options. Girl can wonder. Sure. I mean, don't you wonder? Because I wonder. Ron Monkey Up DeSantis? Yeah. Tom Cotton from Arkansas? What about Ben Sasse, that new and different kind of Republican who's absolutely undifferentiatable from every other old and identical kind of Republican? Mo Brooks, less brains. Kind of has a presidential election slogan ring about it, don't it? You know it. Hey, look, it's our buddy Will, formerly of Chicago. Hey, Will, how are you?
Good. I am enjoying my day here in the San Fernando Valley, having spent hours preparing for a teaching test. I am, tomorrow actually marks the formal end of being employed with my employer, so I will be working on employment, but I have a good interview at a great school next week. So before we get to anything else, and I will have lots to say about a certain well-oiled machine. If you can, please donate to The Horn and any other program that moves you, because honestly, I hate to tell you, Robin doesn't have a billionaire backer. Neither do lots of people who many of you listen to. As a matter of fact, I would find it safe to say that, Robin, you don't even have a millionaire backer.
No, it's embarrassing, but I don't.
Yeah, so let's be honest here. We're going to have to do this on our own because we do not need to wait for a messiah to rescue us, because right now things are so grim that I am grateful I spent 4 days traveling cross country to California, because a lot of people I know in Northwest Indiana who are, good heavens, even the Mitt Romney Republican I know is upset about this decision. Let's be blunt. We need voices like Robin's out there, so please do what you can. Sorry, I know you hate to do the promotion, but one thing I've learned in working with organizations is you have to promote events. Now, concerning Mulvaney's well-oiled machine,
yeah.
I tried analyzing what machine to compare it to, so now the obligatory Star Trek reference, I had for a moment thought that it was the Borg he was referring to. But there's a great problem. The Borg, yes, they assimilate everything. They have no concept of individual rights. They will use and discard their members completely and merely recycle the parts. But darn it, they do have a weird sense of equality, unlike today's GOP. So you know things are bad when you have to say there's one area where the fictional board exceed the morality of today's Republican Party. The Borg at least believe in equality. It's not equality any of us would want, but I believe it is much more equal than what we saw at the Supreme Court last Friday.
I think there's more on... The next term opens on the first Monday in October. Oddly enough, there was a really delightful little sort of dramedy back in the 80s that featured, I think, Jill Clayburgh and Walter Matthau, called First Monday in October. That court is nothing like this court. But they come back into session, and they will have more mischief to make. And I'm not terribly spiritual, but is it wrong to hope for like the earth to open up and just never? Well, no, I'll just hush.
Well, it is. Well, they have certainly said such things about you. Nicole Sandler, Mike Malloy, Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller. So I don't know if it's wrong. I think it's at least a bit impolite. But as I like to say, the universe has a way of catching up to you. So in the case of some of the justices, my wish is that the truth, whatever it may be, comes out. Because based on what I suspect about some of them, could be in a world of hurt. And I think one thing that we have to remember is you do not bring a feather duster to a boxing match. Too often I think we are worried about feelings and hurting things. At this point, I know people have questioned the wisdom of outing Lindsey Graham, but would that be a permissible tactic? Because right now, we have women who are going to be fighting for their lives, literally. I worry that if they cross a state line, they could be subject to prosecution and arrest. And also, let me repeat something Randy Rhodes has said. When someone tells you who they are, believe them. So what did Clarence Thomas have to say about some other decisions, notably leaving out the one that allowed him to marry Ginny Thomas, that they are based on a flawed legal theory? I think Thomas tipped his hand a bit much. So this is this movement of 50 years to try to overturn Roe v. Wade points out to something that the GOP has gotten that we do not understand, namely that they have unity. Namely that they see themselves as one. And this is where I fault our progressives. Too often, we just break into little, small tribes. I'm in
very good at that, really.
I'm an LGBTQ rights person. I'm a environmentalist. Guess what? We need to be all.
Well, precisely, Will, and I've argued that and hollered that from the rooftop for years. Whatever rights for whatever marginalized group you're talking about, they are all part of the broad general heading of human rights. Okay, going all the way back to working on things like the AIC Act and mountaintop removal. You know, the fact of the matter is, we got a little frustrated along the way because We kept being shuffled off into the environmentalism ghetto.
Yes.
And I mean no disrespect when I say that, but it made...
I understand.
This idea that we were opposed to the destruction of the environment in Central Appalachia because, I mean, it's ugly. It does horrible things. It does horrible things to all the living things around it. But, we were called tree huggers. And bunny somethingers. And, that we cared more about a butterfly than we did a human being and their livelihood and their ability to put food on their families. Well, that wasn't true. Environmentalism is nothing if it does not have a human rights and particularly an economic and social justice component to it.
Right, and just considering the health of the Appalachian communities, what the dust does, what some of those dams, would you say, full of coal tar, water, and heaven knows what else, which are perilously near schools, when those burst open, there won't be a school there. So
there will be a swath of death and destruction miles wide and even more miles long. And exactly. It's not if, it's when.
Exactly. And I think that maybe we are beginning to get it as progressives, but too often I think we marginalize each other, we ghettoize each other, and we forget that we have things in common. We're not going to all agree on every issue, but where we can agree, we should agree. And here's what we're facing. We have a court that has decided that certain rights that were presumed to be established law, precedent, are not necessarily so. I view the words of Clarence Thomas as him speaking out loud what many of his colleagues are thinking. And we are going to have to fight back through the other branches, the executive and legislative branch. I would hope that Merrick Garland is considering some action. And if he is, and he's not, hasn't revealed so far, remind us not to play poker with this guy if he plays poker in terms of keeping secret, because if Merrick Garland wasn't keeping things any more secret, you would think that he was filing his reports into a black hole. But it's been rough, and I know that we can easily lose hope, but we must not. Similarly, we must not fall into fear. So if you remember Frank Herbert's Dune, there's the Bene Gesserit litany against fear. Fear is the...
I was thinking of it earlier today. Fear is the little death that brings total oblivion.
Yes. I actually, I'll quote from it. And by the way, I did post it on my Facebook page recently, and I should perhaps share it to the horn. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is a little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone, past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear is gone, there will be nothing, and only I will remain. They are banking on our fear. Those who have applauded this decision and wish to revert America to at least 1959, if not earlier. They are banking on our fear, because a lot of this is just to please the voters who will go with these issues and completely support any law that gives corporations powers and makes trying to sue a corporation or limit it a fantasy. Let's face it, we're in deep trouble, but is not hopeless, because in the end we have more people. There was an article in The Guardian a few days ago, which talked about an asymmetrical civil war. Namely, that while right wing may have more of the guns, what the left has, and by the way, the left is catching up on gun ownership, what the left truly has are money and tech. And it was money and tech that ended the protests on the bridge in Windsor, Canada. And we may not see, hopefully we will not see this as a hot civil war, but could I, honestly, if I was asked, are we in a cold civil war? I would say it would certainly seem so, or if we're not in it, we're beginning to hear the cannons being pulled up to Fort Sumter. So we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to join with others, even if we just can't agree on all the issues? Are we willing to work hard because we still have the right to vote, even with all the gerrymandering, even with the ridiculous Electoral College, even with a Senate which by design was meant to be non-democratic, meaning that a state with fewer people than the city of Los Angeles or a decent-sized suburb can have two senators. So we have to ask ourselves, do we have the courage? Can we stand together and remember that we are one? Because they're counting on our division. They're counting on us to dislike each other, to hate each other, to marginalize, and give each other no consideration. And it's hard. I'm not going to lie. This is going to make working for the Biden election, working for the Obama election, working for the Gore election seem relatively easy. Because we have to think in terms of not just one election or the next election. We have to think in terms of years and decades, and yes, maybe even generations, because we have people on the court who are going to be there for at least a generation, barring illness. I mean, let's face it. We now will have, with the appointment of Ketanji Brown, a third justice who has clerked for other very, very recent justices, including those who have been on the court in the last decade. So we have to get out there. It's not hopeless, because if it were, I think I'd be intellectually honest about it, but we have to believe in ourselves and our own power to make change, because if we don't, who will?
Be the change you want to see in the world.
In the end, it's up to us.
But the question, and I'm not, I'm, I respect and revere your optimism and your commitment to not giving up. And I don't want to give up either, and I'm not gonna. But you know, when we say it's up to us, Will, how do we organize?
That's part of the problem. I think one thing we have to realize is we need to start talking to each other, which we should have done already. Yes, the environmentalists need to talk to the LGBTQ community, and both of them need to talk to various social justice groups, right groups, because I think our greatest flaw is we've been living in our own problem. So I think first we have to talk, Then we have to find anyone who we can at least meet maybe halfway or at least or even 60% of the way.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't think, and I'm pulling names out of a hat. I'm not pointing to anyone in particular. But I doubt if there are any self-hating, anti-choice women working for the Sierra Club.
No, I doubt it. Here's the thing: we have the true believers in any cause. Then we have the people in the middle.
So whether you're talking about NARAL or National Organization for Women or Sierra Club or the NAACP, well, might be some pro-lifers in the NAACP. But, you know, within the Human Rights Campaign, I think there is uniform agreement across the generally across the spectrum of social justice organizations. The question is how to bring them together.
And this is...
and then if you bring them together, what do you do? And this goes back to the eternal. It's damn near an eternal question that I've been asking for, you know, the 19 years that I've been back behind a microphone. But, for instance, protesting in D.C. And these things are daunting tasks to organize. They are logistic nightmares, Will. And but the thing is, we don't need a Saturday protest in D.C.,
No,
we need some method of manifesting sustained day in, day out outrage. Does that make sense to you? And the question is,
I don't know
what that day in, day out outrage looks, sounds, or feels like.
Nor do I, but I'm certain that there is someone who, can figure out. I don't know who, but we need to do something, because I refuse to be paralyzed. I mean, I'll support those that I can. I'll support the good causes that I can. But we need to start acting together, because in the words of Ben Franklin, if we do not all hang together, we most assuredly shall
hang separately.
And this is what I fear, because I'm worried that these court decisions will lead to violence. And this is something that I dread, because honestly, our capacity to hurt each other has grown so exponentially in the last 150 years that Civil War weapons are almost obsolete.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I've been saying, in fact, I think I coined the phrase. It's gotten some legs in recent years, but I think I was the first person out there talking about a cold Civil War. Because I was talking about it well over a decade ago.
Well, you do have this habit of being prescient, which is a mixed blessing. Ask Cassandra about that.
No kidding.
But...
Yeah, it was Clytemnestra who murdered her... Yeah, murdered Agamemnon in the bath, wasn't it?
Yes. And what we have to do is... do what we can locally and nationally, and just try building up a movement. And if we do so in our own communities, perhaps it will coalesce into something larger, and then we'll have a few people step up to to be leaders, because I think too often in this country, we tend to look for a messiah figure, someone to lead us. And this, I think, is one of the weaknesses. I mean, for all the flaws of the right, they at least have created a sustained movement. And they did so after the loss in 64 by Goldwater. And within less than 20 years, they were able to get one of their own in the White House. And this tells me it can be done. Question is, will we do it? And another question is, will we step up and support those things that make it possible, such as this program and other allied programs? It's just that I have questions, but I admit I don't have solutions. But I know that logically, solutions should be out there somewhere. And I think if we try finding them together, we stand a chance.
A chance. Well, Will, thank you very kindly for jumping in, and thank you for your kind request to folks to help us actually reach the end of June.
Right, and let's.
I hope your interview is simply fantastic.
I hope so. I'm optimistic. The key thing is to realize if one thing doesn't work, you keep trying. It's only when you believe you are beat that you actually are beat. If people could be defiant in hells on earth, such as Buchenwald and Auschwitz, saying that you may do what you wish, but you will not break my soul, then I think we can at least have enough strength and courage to move forward in this dark time, because others have walked through even greater darkness than we have known. And perhaps we have to realize that we will survive this, and we need not do this alone.
From your mouth to God's ear.
Amen. Be well.
You too. Take care, Will. Bye. Oh, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh sent this along, and I'm going right back to the phones. Ron and Raleigh sent this along. According to the second season of Picard with the new Borg Queen, the Borg now have a new vision of their purpose. They are now standing in the breach to protect mankind. So the Borg are now better than Republicans in every way. Yeah, it's kind of like how Alabama is now actually behind Iran in how they treat trans people. Not to compare Iran to the Borg, but I think I just did. I mean, or maybe Alabama to the Borg. I'm not sure. I'm so confused. Let's go back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, what's going on?
Lady B, dear, how are you?
I'm okay. If you hear toilet flushing, I really try to avoid
it. I understand. And if there's any way to possibly do this, if you could go to the handset as opposed to the speaker, I think we'll have a lot more luck.
Oh, shoot. It might be because I'm in an echoing place.
Yeah, we need a restroom in there that has a lot of old egg cartons eggshell cartons on the walls. Just a little sound dampening.
Oh, I know, right? Let me see.
Make us more relatable.
I know. Well, Robin, you were in the women's restroom in this case, and nobody was getting shut out. Is that a little better?
Yes, decidedly better.
Okay, yeah, it was because, well, that's what you sing. You know, not only do you go to use the restroom, you have to sing in the restroom too, because it's supposed to have the best acoustic. I was thinking about your situation with the estrogen, and I thought, maybe it's possible that some members can, like, maybe take you on a trip down to Mexico or something? Is there any way you can obtain it like that, or how would that work?
You know, it's all cash on the barrel head, so, you know, I don't know, obviously, if I was in San Diego, that would be a much more likely scenario, but, I mean, I don't know if it's available down there. I mean, it is a production shortage.
Okay.
I mean, so. I can't find it here in West Virginia. My sisters in Alabama can't get it. One of the few like us up this way, a girlfriend of mine, she can't get it. And the thing is, you know, the alternatives are patches and pills. And those things were almost, they were meaningless to my transition. The first 7 months of my transition were completely thrown away because I could not achieve cis female estrogen levels until I went on the injections in May of 2021. And so, that's why my medical transition or my endocrine transition is kind of lagging behind my surgical transition.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of weird biochemistry that goes with it, but so I'm looking at, if worst comes to worst, I'm looking at going with a compounding pharmacy way the hell out of state and getting a cream that I just rub on the inside of my arm every day.
Is that better? Because transdermal. Yeah, isn't that?
Well, it's better than the patch, because I know I had no luck with the patch, and it's better than the pills, because the pills inevitably pass through the liver and convert to something called estrone instead of estradiol, which is a much, 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 much weaker form of female sex hormone.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know a lot about it. I know when I had to have a hysterectomy, I had fibroids in my uterus the size of a golf ball. In fact, I spoke to the woman, the nurse, she said, "You had 16 fibroids and a tumor, and they were the size of golf balls." It's like, oh, that's why my stomach was depleted. But they put me on, you know, I can't think of it now. They put me on that for a while. And when I was about 50, my doctor's like, or late 40s, says, "You don't need to be on this stuff. You're too young for it." That's like, okay. But I can't remember. Was it progesterone? I don't know about it, but it was because, menopause so early.
Post-hysterectomy, it was probably estrogen.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking, it was still, it did okay. I mean, I still have some hot flashes, but, you know, I wasn't going to, like, kill every man that I saw. You know, maybe I should have. But anyway, I actually don't get to spend as much time with you as I wanted to. But I was thinking about how people don't really focus on things until it happens to them. And I'm kind of wondering if that's what's going on. I mean, you know, what happened with women and our abortion rights access and all that, that's important. But again, I think Americans have this thing where it's kind of like, oh, that's not going to affect me. And then something else happens and they're like, that's not going to affect me. And then something else happens, and that's not, you know, when are we going to reach that point where, you know, everybody, I mean, I think with the birth control, that's definitely going to affect a lot more people than I think. But when are we going to reach that point? When are we going to be able to have people give a shit because it's for the greater good, as opposed to this whole, you know, I don't want to be bothered because it doesn't affect me.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Lady B, because it's not, I mean, it's so frustrating because it's not like we didn't know that this was coming. You know, the degree of just disgust and disdain and dislike that I have for Susan Collins and Joe Manchin, you know, what kind of fools are they? Or did they just know and they were hiding behind some sort of pathetic veneer of feigned ignorance? And I think I know which one is worse, but, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, again, I don't think Susan Collins was some innocent victim of fraud.
No.
I honestly, she knew that Brett Kavanaugh was lying out of his ass. And he was talking out of his ass, and he was lying to his teeth. She knew that. She didn't care. You know? I mean, and besides, she's way past birthing age, and I'm sure if her daughters or granddaughters or whatever her children have any issues with it, Mommy can take care of it. Mommy's
well,
a powerful
she's from Maine. They can just go over the borders into Canada.
There you go. Again, it's that whole situation of people who aren't affected by this shit don't care. You know, we recently got Lauren, what do you call it, bobblehead Boebert back in office, or at least up for the, she won the primary.
Right.
And it's likely that she may go back and represent Colorado again for her district. And I want to believe that because we vote by mail, that most people had already cast their ballot before all of this stuff came out. But then again, there may be a contingent of Coloradans who honestly think that, you know, it's like, fuck you guys, you know, a big fuck you. No, we're going to put her back in anyway. We know she's crazier than a shithouse rat, but fuck you, you know. We like her, and she's cute, you know, or something like that, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, we still have some freedoms here in Colorado. You're certainly welcome to partake of them, but I know that this is not West Virginia.
Well, no, I mean, in all uh-huh. honesty, I have to take into account... And I'm honestly not trying to pogo stick up onto the cross. I'm not. But you know, I'm unemployable. Mm. And
but you're a lawyer, boo. Can't you work from home or set up a
I mean, I have a legal education. I'm not a practicing lawyer. You know, maybe I could find something as a late 50s paralegal kind of girl Friday kind of thing, but I don't know if it would provide me enough money to live.
And I was going to say, it'll probably suck the soul out of you anyway, because you wouldn't be doing what you were doing.
Yeah, and rents, you know, I don't know what property values are like out there, but I imagine the rent is a booger like it is anywhere else.
It's probably higher. Yeah, I mean, well, because I always like to blame the Californians for that. You know, a lot of Californians came out here, and whatever they sold their homes for in California, they were able to get twice the space, more bathrooms, you know, a paved driveway. So they kind of came here and brought all their high prices with them. God bless them.
Well, and the other thing, you know, so much of this is now growth of the Great Recession and the Great Foreclosure Crisis. When people who still had money, and there were plenty of people who did, snapped up real estate, and then boom, Airbnb.
Yep,
and it's a lot more profitable to run an Airbnb than it is to deal with a tenant every day. Because you can.
I was saying that's exactly what my nieces and nephews are going through right now. You know, they have families and they want to buy a home. They can't. They can't afford it. I've got her niece who's a CNA. She just turned 44, I think I mentioned her yesterday. And her rent went from $1,000 to $1,400 a month. The only place that she could afford to drive to is work. And, you know, because gas prices are so high. And she's renting out a one-bedroom apartment, you know, and she's paying $1,400 a month for it.
Yeah, that's insane.
They did get a raise. You know, all the CNAs, all, you know, medical personnel got raises, but they raised prices to match that, you know, which is the stupidest. It's just the biggest con in the history of the world. And I wish Jesus would come down and say, you people are so fucking greedy. Why do you do this? Why do you keep doing this to each other? What's the matter with you people? You know, I don't understand it. I don't understand why we're so close to each other. But anyway, I think that I have to wrap this up. I was excited to call you, and then I realized there's somebody in the office, and they're a few doors away, but I can't be coming about. But thank you for all you do. Come Friday, I'll try to tell you a little something. And thank you for reading my Mrs.
That was simply beautiful.
I had written it like after she was confirmed, and I did get a copyright on it. Just like one of my friends said, that's amazing. And he paid for it. So that was cool. But every time I get it, I want to change wording on it. I see if I could word it that better. But, you know, I figure the copyright office has already got one copy, so I might as well stick to it. But thank you, and I hope maybe that someday I can get it to her. I'm sure she's going to get a lot of mail and a lot of praise, and she'll have some professional poets out there. But, you know, maybe somebody will acknowledge it. I've never written poetry. I'm not a poetry writer.
That was near perfect. I mean, it was. And I don't know, if I were you, I'd find somebody who had a little bit of a hand for amateur calligraphy.
Oh, okay.
It might make for, or somebody who does cross stitchery, and it would make for a mighty long sampler.
Okay, yeah, I know. It was rather long, but I was with my feelings, and I probably had a little bit of confusion.
But I thought you did a lovely job of sticking to the format.
I'm telling you, Robin, oh my God. I had actually had some pretty good CDs, just the one. And, stick to the fucking format. One of the things I used to do, though, you talk about the, I remember that Love Scene by Barry White and Love Unlimited Orchestra.
Oh,
but
I love it.
We had a little more, we had a little more latitude. But if I was bumping up to the top of the hour and I knew I had to do legal ID, sometimes I would slip in some Dave Mason, We Just Disagree, and it clocked in at 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
50 seconds. Yeah. And I would just put that in there. And that's just a great song. So.
The intro to Year of the Cat. The intro to Year of the Cat goes forever.
Oh my God! Yeah.
The intro to the Manfred Mann version of "Blinded by the Light."
Blinded by the Light. Yeah. Oh my God! Tons of them. There's tons of them, man. But I was thinking of the bass line into "New Frontier." You know how it just seems like it's kind of galloping, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know? And then Sagan comes in with the organ or the, you know, just the keyboards and tears it up. And the Steely Dan is such a tight band. It was absolutely amazing. You know?
Yeah. So, the series, the Australian, I almost said her name, the Australian girl who lives in my iPhone, is absolutely convinced that the only thing in the world I want to hear now is Steely Dan.
Oh,
and about
shit.
and about half the time she's right.
Mm-hmm. And what did you say your wife's name is?
Annette.
We used to call
Annette.
Her Agnes.
Yeah, Annette.
Annette. So Annette's not a big Steely Dan fan.
No, but she's relented a little bit lately. She looked at me the other day and said, "It's okay. You can listen to Steely Dan if you want to."
Wow, that's quite the privilege there, man.
Yeah,
take advantage. Yeah, Dan. And there's a group called themselves the Dukes of September. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
No.
It is Donald Fagen, Boz Scaggs.
Oh, get out.
And, oh my God. I want to say Michael McDonald, but it might be, I don't know if it's Steve Miller.
Oh, don't get me.
Think.
Have you please tell me you've seen the old SCTV skit with Michael McDonald?
I think we're.
Where he's
I've seen.
He's doing the backing vocal on "Ride Like the Wind" by Christopher Cross.
Oh yeah, he did do it actually. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he did it, but they did. It's somebody playing Michael McDonald because it's obviously SCTV.
Yeah.
But it absolutely destroys Joy in Ann Arbor and me. It absolutely destroys us.
Okay, I'm going to have to look at it then. I'm going to have to look at that.
And of course, I know you got to go. But, you know, it all begins with an interview that I had when I was, I had to do compulsory law firm interviews like second year of law school. And they make you go to these things, and you know you're not a fit for them, and you know they know that you're not a fit for them, and you just kind of sit there and look at each other and feel awkward. And that was the summer that I wallpapered my little Cracker Box Palace apartment with rejection.
Nice George Harrison reference.
with rejection letters from silk stocking law firms that I didn't want to work at.
Wow.
Because, you know, they were in the business of fucking over widows and orphans. And so there was this one firm I signed up, and then I found out the day I was walking in that I was going to be interviewed by a guy named Michael McDonald.
Oh,
and I made a promise to myself, and I fulfilled that promise because they ask you the bullshit questions, Lady B. Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Being able to do that.
And I looked at Michael McDonald and I said, well, Michael, I'm not sure because I've got such a long way to go. Such a long way to go. He was oblivious.
Oh, of course.
And
of course. If you'd have thrown in to make it to the border of Mexico, he still would have been oblivious.
Yeah, such a long way to go. Such a long way to. And I put some relatability into it, and he just sat there with his hands clasped on the table and nodded and said, oh, good answer.
You magnificent bastard. I recognize your reference.
And so I got out, and my buddy looked at me and said, did you do it? I did it.
Oh, my God. Probably similar to Idiocracy. Not Idiocracy, but Opposite. I remember one of the workers' names was Michael Bolton.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, and the thing is, this predates Idiocracy, so I don't know, maybe Mike Judge heard the story in a bar somewhere along the way, because for a while there, my buddies were telling it to anybody that would, yeah, Robin did that!
Don't be fucking with that guy.
Such a long way to go.
He could have gotten upset, but I doubt.
No, he was too clueless. He's too clueless.
Anyway. Okay. Well, listen, Don.
You have a lovely evening. You know, you always make my evening, and the Horn Family Community Congregation. Jude popped in real quick to say that Lady B conveys a reality that soars to the totality of all realms of being.
My goodness, she's ethereal, isn't she?
Yes. Wonderful. The Horn Spiritual Advisor.
She is. She's in touch with more angels than we know.
All right. Girl, you have a good night.
Can we get back to it? Okay, I'm leaving you 4 minutes to the top, or at least according to this analog up here. So.
Well, you know, maybe I got a little time for some Love Unlimited Orchestra.
Hey. I don't know. Barry wouldn't mind.
No, probably not. All right, see you, Lady B. Bye. I would do that, but I don't want to do all the clacking to get it cued up. Maybe I just need to have it on standby for... But no, it'll take me 2 minutes and a half to do the credits. Thank you, everyone who jumped in this evening. We are down two, and thank you to Women Standing. We are down to $314. $614. I'm wishful thinking. We're down to $614 to finish June to the good. Maybe we'll try everything we can to knock that down tomorrow for Thorn in the Side Thursday. If you want to make God laugh, tell her your plans, says Randy Radar. Amen. Hear, hear. Emilio says, everybody knew Kavanaugh and Al were lying. They all knew, all the senators and all the biggest names in corporate media that were reporting on the hearings, and all the owner donors, otherwise known as contributors. God knows the Federalist Society knew they were lying their ass off. The maggot White House knew that Gore Suck and the Handmaid and Brat were lying their ass off, because they would never have gotten the nomination if they were not good at lying. So that's how we end the program. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors, each and every one of you. And thank you for jumping in this evening and getting us down as far as we are. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Let me just check here real quick. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, the folks of Cold River Mountain Watch. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now a proud union shop. Please reach out to your member of the House and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It does mean the world to Appalachia. Please stay safe, get your booster, wear your mask in crowded places, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, keep it handy. I keep a little bottle. It's got Baby Yoda on it. I know, Gogru. In my purse. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, of course, if some babbling former White House Chief of Staff says, well, that was my couch he was being having a nervous breakdown on, avoid that maggot, because he's still a maggot, like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.